Let's start with your name, spelled first and last.
It's Bill Buchholz, B-U-C-H-H-O-L-Z.
Okay. What sort of name is that?
German. Sort of like the Schweizen.
Yeah. Okay. And your car is called?
The car is called Dirigo.
Spelled?
It's D-I-R-I-G-O.
No and capitalization funnies or anything? Just D-I-R-I, you know, capital D.
Every, yes.
No
yes.
Dashes, flashes.
No, it's Latin. It's Latin for I lead or leading the way.
Okay.
It's also the state of Maine slogan.
Ah.
Because we have this saying that as Maine goes, so goes the nation, based on our congressional delegation over the years.
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
All right. And what do you do in real life?
I build boats.
Boats. Mm-hmm. What type of boat?
I build motorboats, sailboats, generally smaller boats in my shop, and I've done a series of major, larger projects as a project manager, restorations and new construction.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's something reminiscent of a cigarette boat in that. Am I misreading it?
Well, that's the best I've gotten. Usually it's kayak or canoe. Cigarette boat, that's very sexy.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
polish that down and you know, make it shine, and you really have the same sort of woodwork.
Right. Well, it's varnished wood.
Yeah.
It's varnished wood. And there's all kinds of wonderful objects in the world that are made of wood and varnished.
Okay.
And
so most of it is, some of it is obviously varnished wood. The rest is also?
The fenders are carbon fiber.
Okay.
We couldn't get the wood to get around those very quick shapes that the fenders have.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to build a mold of that on the car. And that was difficult. It took us about 2 months, 3 months of Saturdays to build just the fenders.
Mm-hmm.
We had to build a mold of the hardware cloth on the car,
mm-hmm.
which bends nicely in three dimensions.
Yeah.
And then you can dart it and tuck it and
mm-hmm.
really get some nice shapes. And then we covered that with Bondo and polyester and fiberglass
mm-hmm.
and fared it and then waxed it
mm-hmm.
and then used that as a mold to make the fenders and the front air dam as one part.
Mm-hmm.
We took that off and then took the mold off and mm-hmm. installed the fenders on the car.
Okay.
And then, so that's the painted part that you
But that's
see.
Not sort of vacuum bagged fiberglass, isn't it? No. So this is boat building techniques.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are some vacuum bagged parts in this mm-hmm. car, but, you know, vacuum bagging, it sounds really exotic, but it's not.
Uh-huh.
You can use a vacuum cleaner for simple parts.
Yeah.
So it's
Well, usually handling the material is the careful part. I mean, the technology of doing the vacuum bag is pretty straightforward. You get a mold. But handling those, especially when they're epoxies and stuff, is an art that has to be really learned, is by my understanding.
Yeah. It can get out of control pretty quickly.
Okay, and you're saying we, so you did this in your boat building shop?
No, we did this in neutral territory.
Who's we, then?
We are the Maine Automotive X Team, and we're a 501(c) nonprofit organization.
Does the team have a name?
It's the Maine Automotive X
Team. Okay.
Yes, and that's our corporate name.
Mm-hmm.
And all the money that went into the car was raised from donations privately.
Okay, to compete in the Automotive X Prize.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And so that was a great fundraising tool. And we were disappointed that we dropped out for our donors' sake, well, our sake, because they gave us money based on the Automotive X Prize.
Right.
But they didn't really care.
So you have dropped out of the competition?
We have.
Because?
Because it became obvious that the car wasn't really going to be up to snuff to their specifications. They required a set of CAD drawings,
mm-hmm.
which we didn't even have pencil drawings for that. That was very built just by eyeball and bagosh.
Okay,
and
by people who knew how the materials worked.
Yeah.
Right.
And they also required a business plan to demonstrate that you can manufacture 10,000 units a year. They needed a parts supply list. And initially, we sort of thought, well, we'll deal with that when we get to it. Well, we got to it, and we couldn't deal with it.
Mm.
We could barely get the car built.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also out of money. And a lot of the money that was promised us, contingent upon getting our 501(c), evaporated last fall when the stock market crashed. And it took us 13 months to get our tax-exempt status.
Mm-hmm.
So that was February. So we got our IRS, our 501(c) status in February. We couldn't get any more money, enough to compete, really. We had enough to, at that point, to sign up to pay the balance of our entry fee, and then we'd be broke.
Mm-hmm.
So there was three of us left. And we thought, what should we do? Should we shoot the wad and stay in and try and raise more to finish the car? Or should we quit and just finish the car? And we knew we didn't have the horsepower to really engage at the level they wanted contestants to be engaged in. So
okay.
We decided to drop out.
Now, with three people, so there's two other people that you know, who are they and what do they do in real life?
Yeah, I would say, in all fairness, it's really down to two, maybe. The other person is Evan Schmidt, and
spell
he's
those, please.
S-C-H-M-I-D-T.
E-V-A-N?
E-V-A-N.
Okay.
And he's a builder, house builder, on Islesboro, Maine, an island mm-hmm. in Penobscot Bay. And he's a motorcycle nut, not really alternative energy, but, you know, likes the idea of small, high-mileage cars. And so he got involved really through his son. His son is... freshman at
Name.
Rochester's son, Colin Schmidt.
Okay, C-O-L-I-N.
Yes, and he's a freshman, just finished his freshman year at Rochester Technology Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And so Evan came with his son, and Colin was involved as well on weekends and days home from school and whatnot. But Evan became really, really interested and devoted and a great powerhouse. So he and I really are the ones now who are still in communication about the car and work together.
Do you live on an island also?
No, I live on the mainland.
Okay.
But on Penobscot Bay.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Okay.
So there are some logistics. And so we built the car in a garage of a member who died about 6 months into the project.
Mm.
And he just built this garage. And he had said, let's build a car in my place. You know, it hasn't been used yet. It's brand new. It'll be neutral to all of us, so no one has to worry about their own tools being lost or messed up. And so we did. And then he died, but his kid said, hey, he want to have you do this, so take your time, take as long as you want, use it.
Mm-hmm.
So we met there every Saturday morning from 9 to 12 for a year and a half and built the car.
Okay. But not nights and weekends, just weekend mornings.
Well, sometimes I'd come in during the week, because I'm self-employed and I can get away, and I'd come in and I'd...
But primarily.
Yeah,
That was the discipline, Saturday mornings.
Right, right. And the other guy, Rick Pearson, P-I-E-R-S-O-N, mm-hmm. he runs a gift shop, and he's an old drag racer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think Rick has come around toward high mileage as being a good thing, but being a retired drag racer, horsepower was always more his interest. But his technological insights were always helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the car. Give me the technical specs, and then talk about it in more ethereal.
Yeah. Okay. It's a three-wheeled Tadpole format trike, two wheels in the front, one in the back. The rear end, the rear suspension and wheel and tire and brakes from a 85 Kawasaki 750.
Mm-hmm.
It has an inboard shock, aluminum mag wheel, very nice, very lightweight. And it's with that motorcycle that we registered the car. So mm-hmm. this car is legally a modified
Kawasaki.
85 Kawasaki. Yeah. We identified early on in the project that once we decided on diesel,
mm-hmm.
one of the guys that identified this Daihatsu
yes.
diesel as being the one we have to have. This is better than the Kubota. It's great. All this stuff.
We've run into them before at the Tortoiseau.
Have you? Okay. Yeah. Good. And it's been terrific. And so we didn't know quite where to find one. At the same time, we were looking at utility vehicles like the John Deere Gator and this Kawasaki Mule as potential host vehicles for front end and suspension parts.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to go to cars because cars are generally heavy
mm-hmm.
and overbuilt for what we thought we would need. So we found on eBay, I was looking at a picture of this Kawasaki Mule and the photograph of the engine. It was a Daihatsu.
Mm-hmm.
I knew from all the information I'd seen on the internet that this was a Daihatsu. It didn't say it anywhere. It was a Kawasaki engine for all they knew, but it was indeed a Daihatsu. So when we bought that mule, I had it delivered on eBay, and within 2 hours and five guys, we had totally destroyed it with sawzalls and cut off wheels, and it was a pile of junk. But we used a lot of the structure of that car. We used the engine, we used the steering, we used the front end suspension.
All right, give me a few words about what a mule is.
A mule is a four-wheel drive utility vehicle, and it has a small dump body. It's 4 feet wide and maybe 6 feet long.
Where would you find one in use?
Estates, farms.
Okay, so yeah. A little garden tractor writ large.
Right, with all-wheel drive and with a CVT transmission.
Constant velocity.
Right.
Transmission.
25.
Or no, continuously variable ratio transmission.
Right, right. And 25 miles an hour top speed. But has McPherson strut front end and rack and pinion steering.
Okay.
So good things to work with.
So you don't have like a T-bar like the Moonbeam does, you know, little, you know, motorcycle steering.
No, this is rack and pinion.
Rack and pinion, okay.
One of the first mistakes we made with the steering, we hooked it up pretty much as off of the mule. And because you sat above the front wheels, the output shaft from the rack was almost vertical.
Right.
And so we put it back together with the universal joint there at a right angle. And none of us caught it. So we're looking at this thing for months, and nobody, and we didn't try and turn the wheels.
Obviously.
So we got down the road, and we had this awful hard spot there, because it would turn real easy, and then you'd hiccup up against that U-joint, and boom, it would snap. Not snap, but it would, you know,
break over. Yeah.
Yeah, so it was very irritating. But we drove it that way for the first 500 miles.
We'll figure this out someday.
Yeah, we'll get to it. And so eventually we did, and we used 5/8 aluminum to fabricate new steering arms, because we widened the front end 2 feet. We had to make new drive shafts and new steering arms. Well, the aluminum snapped at one point, so we took the body off, and we made new 3/4-inch steel steering arms. And then we rolled the rack back, reoriented it on its mount so it pointed more back toward the steering column. And that's made all the difference in the world. That's a great car to drive now.
Okay.
It handles beautifully.
Now, I think I heard you say it's engine in the rear, front wheel drive.
Right.
The radiator's in the front.
Right.
The engine's in the back, so
right.
There's a lot of plumbing and drive shafts and stuff coming through that center hump.
That tunnel, right.
Yeah.
There is. We wanted to have a rear engine front drive car.
Because
of weight distribution.
Right.
For one. And that was a group effort to hammer that out. There was a front engine division and there was a back engine division, and we talked it out, and back engine won, and it's good because now all the heat's back there too, and the weight balance works out well. And so we had to widen the front end of this mule enough to get the people forward. So we didn't favor the rear wheel heavily with the weight distribution.
Right.
And the radiator needs to be up front because where the wind comes.
Right.
And it also moves the weight forward.
Yeah.
So the fuel tank, radiator are forward. And that thing, that engine has 1-inch cooling lines on it, which are huge. So there's a lot of
water running around.
Yeah. And so today, I was on the interstate going 55 miles an hour, 90 degrees outside, and it was pretty much on 180, it would hit 190 climbing hills and then go back down.
Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think the layout of components works well. The transmission came from a Ford Ranger, 85 Ford Ranger pickup. It's a 5-speed, it's small, it's lightweight. It was my wife's truck.
Okay, and just lever arm shifting mechanism, nothing elaborate?
No, the...
So it's just a standard shifter, except that everything's running back instead of forward.
Right, and so therefore the shift pattern's in reverse.
Ooh, that's a little tricky.
First gear is over and back.
Okay, this is not for the unwashed.
Yeah, well, I have labeled it on the stick-shift knob.
Yeah, but still, I mean, years of habit will not go down well for a lot of people.
You know what? I built a boat once. It was a proa, a South Pacific type of sailboat. And the way it worked out is that you sat in... well away from the center line of the boat, and you had this long tiller extension.
Mm-hmm.
And you pulled the tiller toward you to head up and pushed away from you to fall off, which is the opposite of what most sailboats, all sailboats, mm-hmm. work like. People who'd never sailed before picked it up immediately. Mm-hmm. But those who sailed for their whole life couldn't steer the boat to save their life.
Mm.
And I got used to it pretty quickly, and then went back to a conventional sailboat, and I was all over the place. I was making a mess of the whole thing. And so I've been driving an automatic transmission car now for, at least 15 years.
Okay, so you had to learn
so
over
I'm already
again.
Deprogrammed that, so it wasn't too hard. Although I did get lost downshifting, and I still do occasionally.
Mm.
But it's pretty intuitive now for me. I have about 1,000, at least 1,000 miles on this car.
Okay. Now, the Roo Pod has got rear-wheel drive. The Moonbeam has rear-wheel drive, but you don't. Why?
We decided to accept a mileage penalty because it is going to be worse mileage running through a transmission, a drive shaft, differential, CV joints, all that. But we wanted a car that would really be more car-like and have great traction and great handling. I think if you put studs on this car, it'd be bulletproof in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Because it'd be front-wide drive, and the rear would just go along for the ride.
And what happens in the wintertime, there's that sort of center island of slush and snow that you're driving in if it's rear-wheel drive. Mm. And Moonbeam found this out. And Moonbeam, sort of advocated for this format. You go through rear tires quicker with the rear drive. Mm. It's much simpler to build.
Mm.
Much simpler to build a rear-wheel drive.
Yeah.
But we wanted to do it like this. And then we also have in the back of our mind the idea of an all-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
We could do like an electric hub motor for the rear wheel and then have a little bit of a hybrid or a hydraulic drive. But, you know, by splitting it this way, we have the potential to add an all-wheel drive. And that would be quite remarkable for an economy car like that.
Mm.
All-wheel drive. We'd tap right into the SUV market.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have those Escalade drivers come in droves to pick up Zeros.
So there's still someone thinking about commercial possibilities for this?
I don't think so. Though someone today asked if they could buy one.
Okay. Are you going to pursue that?
I would. I'd love to build things. And
so if they're willing to deal with the one-of-a-kind nature of the beast?
Well, it would become two-of-a-kind quickly, and then four-of-a-kind, and ten-of-a-kind.
Yeah, but you're not going to get any, you know, you're going to have to go out and scrounge all the parts again.
Exactly.
redo everything, so you're not going to get any economies of scale. The only thing is that the second one, none of your mistakes will be in this one.
Yeah, no, it's not practical, really, to do any thought of production, because it becomes a marketing exercise.
But if it's a hobby thing, if you're building, I mean, when you build boats, you're often building unique vehicles,
mm-hmm.
you know, vessels. You could build yet another sailboat or yet another dinghy or whatever, but someone comes along and says, well, but I want mine a little bit this way.
No, they always do.
So you do custom stuff. So
mm-hmm.
this would be another custom thing, except you don't really have, I mean, you've got a boat shop. You don't have a car shop.
You know, I would much rather be involved in the new economy at some level than building boats. I mean, boats are great, and they're dream machines, and they make people happy, and sailboats are tranquil and somewhat low impact, but ultimately, I really would like to be building something that makes it a little more meaningful
mm-hmm.
to everybody at large. And I think high mileage vehicles are just terrific.
Yeah. And things for an island. I mean, you know, vehicles specially designed for, I mean, islands. I have a friend who came to the Tour du Sol from North Haven.
Uh-huh.
And they have an electric Vanagon, and they say it's a perfect island vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Especially of late, they've been putting on more and more solar panels and stuff like that. So things are.
Well, they're also building wind farm on North Haven.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
So, and their Revolution Ride, as they call it, it will plug right in and fit right into that model.
Yeah. So I'm open to all. I have a great shop, a decent set of skills.
So maybe this is your first
resources.
Customer you've just met.
And I'd like to do something for anybody. I mean, you know, it seems in my experience, people, there are a lot of talkers out there, and a lot of dreamers,
right,
and a lot of idea guys, but not a whole lot gets done.
Right.
You notice that?
Yes.
Well, I'd like to be the guy that gets it done.
Right.
I'd like to patch into the idea guys and the dreamers, and be the get it done guy.
We can talk about that. That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
I'm running a one-man band, so I can.
Yeah.
We can talk about that.
Yeah.
Point.
Yeah.
Back to your car.
Right.
All right. So, what am I forgetting to ask? What's important that we?
It's got a 4-gallon fuel tank.
Right.
Which, based on today's run, gives it a good 350-mile range.
Of diesel fuel.
Of diesel fuel. Yeah. Today, averaging 60 miles an hour for 250 miles, I use 3.2 gallons of fuel. I could probably use 2 gallons of. No, I couldn't use 2 gallons. I probably could have boosted it another 10 miles per gallon by putting the windows in,
right,
and driving slower.
Right.
So.
Okay, but 2 seats. The seats are standard.
The seats are standard out of a catalog that one of the guys showed up with one day, and they're very comfortable.
Okay.
They're not lightweight, but they are comfortable.
They're comfortable. So, dune buggy seats or
no? Just I think J.C. Whitney seats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Replacement for Jeeps or
potentially, I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah,
okay,
I mean,
but a standard manufactured seat.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've got a platform behind the seats, so there's
5 cubic feet of cargo space.
Cargo
behind
space.
The seats.
So you're doing better than the Insight, the original Insight.
Was that less?
I think so. The Honda, yeah, there was not a lot.
Well, it had a very high deck, but it was probably up 5 feet long, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was pinched at the back.
Yeah.
And not a lot of room. How do you get to it? Just from reaching behind.
Just behind the seats.
Just, okay, so there's no.
I mean, ultimately, we would like to have a gullwing door on the driver's side that flips up and accesses that space.
Mm-hmm.
But.
This one doesn't.
No, not yet. I mean, we have other issues to deal with, like a speedometer and a clutch.
Yeah, talk about that. You were talking about that in the parking lot.
Yeah, the speedometer is really, it's a tough nut to crack. I don't know anybody can tell me how to make a speedometer for this car. Nothing seems to work. There's no technologies that will receive information from any place that we have to offer it in this car. I tried a bicycle speedometer, but you can't lengthen the cable on them, which I have to do for this one. So,
I would think the drive shaft to the front wheels is fixed ratio, right? All the transmissions behind it.
Right.
So if you put a magnet on there and had a sensor, you get pulse rate, and then you just need to do a pulse rate to you know, RPM, miles per hour thing. The problem there is the tire size changes, but that's essentially how modern speedometers
do. I wonder if I could do that with a bicycle speedometer and then just calibrate it with a GPS.
Yeah.
Because you have a myriad of adjustments for wheel sizes on those.
Then you should be able to do it. If you can find an electronic bicycle speedometer, and I'm sure they make them.
Well, yeah, they're $20, and they come with a little magnetic sensor and a little readout with all kinds of functions. I have one, and this is the odd thing, is that I mounted it on the rear wheel, and I had the car jacked up, and before I cut the wire, I spun the wheel.
Right.
And it read some miles per hour.
Right.
And this is great, it works. So I cut the wire, lengthened it out, mounted the thing, spun it again, looked at it, and it still read the same miles per hour. I got it, I'm so happy. I went for a ride, and then it says 65, 85, 90, 120, 30. It's like all over town, so I don't understand.
Oh, wait.
It didn't work.
It did not work.
No, it didn't work.
Possibly you were out of range, and so the thing was coming around too fast, so it was missing pulses. And sometimes it would see them, and sometimes it wouldn't, and bicycles just don't do 85 miles an hour.
Well, if I was going 10 miles an hour, then it would be accurate.
Right. You were getting errors down there, too?
Yeah, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
But it isn't like a radar pulse that you need to have a out and return.
No,
right?
It's just a blip
just
going by.
Just a blip.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, the wire is probably, you know, I don't know, 24 gauge, or I don't know, really small wire. And I lengthened it out with 18 gauge.
Yeah, I was going to say electrical noise, but diesels don't have electrical noise.
I tried turning it off and coasting. No change.
No.
I mean, there's an alternator there, so there is some loose stuff. But I did turn it off and posted. Nothing changed.
Well, the alternator would still be doing something. Way down here. I don't know.
No, the engine wasn't turning any longer.
Oh, you neutral.
Neutral turned off the engine.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you need somebody who knows electronics to figure that out. Because that is the obvious solution,
I
think.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, put it on the front wheels instead of the rear.
Right.
Off the drive shaft.
Yeah. The drive shaft, that's a good idea. Because it turns slower. We'll see. So that's all right.
All right, what else should we talk about while we're here? Have you long been a gearhead, interested in this sort of thing, or did the X Prize what push you over?
I really had no interest in this car at all. And I was going to the meetings because I'm a friend of Jory's.
Uh-huh.
And I was curious.
Oh, that's right, you guys live in the same town.
Yeah. And so I was curious about group dynamics. Because I'm a lone wolf guy. I like to do my own thing and not have to compromise and just work. And so when this design by committee exercise came out, I thought, well, let me just sit in on this and see how it goes.
And how many people started?
About 25 people.
Yeah.
And so I have been an automotive minimalist, but not really. I don't like working on cars. I hate mechanics. I don't like changing my own oil. I don't work on cars at all. You know, I install engines and boats and all that, and that's fine, but I don't like to work on cars. So I really went through this as an exercise in being a team player. This was my, like, outward-bound cooperative exercise venture, in a way. And that was my main thrust initially. And then I sort of liked the dynamic that evolved with the sort of the five people that washed out at the end as the people really doing their work. It was a great personality group. And then when we were three people, there was never any hierarchy. There was no leader, no one in command, no chief designer. It was a real cooperative effort. And that was a pleasure just to be involved in that.
Yeah. Sure.
And the fact that there was a car involved, it just happens to be a coincidence.
Yeah.
Really.
So it wasn't the project that mattered. It was the process of doing the project that was the joy.
Yeah. It was this group dynamic that was a nice exercise for me. And then I got the car. No one else had even driven it yet.
Oh, wow.
So that's very... I don't really understand that. But I'm not going to push it.
Yeah.
So...
What about your friend on the island?
Yeah. I mean, it's
possible he may just pick it up and make a go of it.
Well, I told his son to take it to college with him this year, to take it to RIT.
Ah.
And turn it loose on campus.
Rensselaer?
Huh?
Rensselaer Institute of Technology?
No, Rochester.
Rochester.
Yeah.
Okay.
And just to have a bunch of techie kids play with it all winter.
Right.
And so he may still do that. And who knows what's going to come back in the spring. But I think that'd be great to give it to a bunch of kids to play with and tweak it, modify it, whatever.
Yeah.
So that's sort of... but mainly, we had a bit of an identity crisis when we left the XPRIZE. Like, well, now why are we doing this? What are we doing? What's going to happen? So we just decided to keep going and drive the car and see what happens. And it's turned into this, like, inspiration vehicle. Just to show people a really, I'll use the word practical loosely. But it's a practical car. You can get
it. You drove it here. I'm sorry. That is a crucial component of practicality.
Yeah.
When we were doing the Tour de Seoul, there was a guy named Tom Hopper who had a hybrid. Originally, it was a plug-in electric with a solar panel to sort of help out. And eventually, he did a hybrid by putting a generator pack on a trailer and running it on used French fry oil.
Oh, yeah.
It turned into a sort of biodiesel. And he drove non-trivial distance from New Hampshire to New York City to enter the Tour de Seoul. And I always thought, you know, if this is about sustainability, this is about practicality, there is the message.
Right.
And when you showed up, I mean, you know, I heard that the Moonbeam trailered, and I understand that's a really tiny car.
Yeah.
And he says 45 miles an hour is really the practical comfortable limit of speed.
Well, that's flat out.
Yeah.
That's flat out.
And the fact that you were able to drive the whole way, you know, without any difficulties and just come and go and, you know.
Yeah. And I can carry lots of stuff. I can sleep in the car. Just about. Yeah, but it's too hot. I'm not going to bother tonight with bugs and all, but that to me would be really cool to be able to go somewhere and sleep in it. So, I mean, and it's great. My wife and I drive it around town. We go to dinners and out.
How long has it been on the road?
Since February, you said.
Since May.
May, okay.
Yeah, we really did a big push at the end. Well, I did a big push at the end to finish the body for this Green Grand Prix in Watkins Glen.
Oh, yes.
And that was the first week in May. And that, when we left the X-Prize, we thought, well, we have to do the Green Grand Prix because our donors expect some sort of competition out of this.
Right. How did you do?
We got second place with 89 miles to the gallon. And the car that beat us was a modified Geo Metro. It actually was a Pontiac version of the Metro. Pontiac made... There was a Suzuki Swift.
Right.
A Geo Metro.
Right.
And Pontiac... I forget the name,
right,
but
okay.
they had one. This was one.
Oh, it was the Canadian model. Had a Pontiac nameplate.
Okay, might have been. It's a three-cylinder, 1.1 liter, great little power plant and drivetrain package. And there's a group called EcoModders.com, and they're kids that modify cars for high mileage. Mm-hmm. They're like high mileage hot rodders. And so he had switched out fifth gear, play with the computer chips a little bit. He had a mileage monitor, a very elaborate computer, a mileage monitor, and the fuel consumption and all that. And he had a big spoiler on the back. He'd taken the rear seat out, the passenger seat out, so it was really tweaked out, and he hypermiled it. And he got 99 miles to the gallon. So he got first. And then close behind me were a bunch of Honda Civics that had been modified as well. So we were quite happy, but ours was the only really amateur-built car in this event. And that was great. And what happened? We towed her to Watkins Glen from Maine. But we got as far as Albany, and my car broke down. So we had gotten this car on the road on Wednesday, driven it about 20 miles, and then loaded up for the trip. So we unloaded Deerigo, put all of our gear in it, all of our tools, and we headed 200 miles off to Watkins Glen. And we drove through a rainstorm. We got there around midnight. But the car just went flawlessly, just beautifully.
Congratulations.
We did the competition, drove back to Albany to get my car, and, like, the car was the hero. It really was a great trip. Of course, getting into my Saab after that, it was like being in an electric car, because the Saab was totally quiet. It was amazing. I mean, we have some noise issues. There's square-cut gears in the differential. There's some whine in the drive shaft universals, I think. And so...
That sounds like something for the kids to work on.
Yeah. It has the real feel of like a 50s MG, like an MG TD.
Yeah.
You know, a little underpowered, kind of noisy, but really fun to drive. You know, a little rough handling, you're downshifting a lot, but just fun. It's really a fun car. I could drive it all day. Although I did drive it all day, and I'm happy to go for a ride right now.
Okay. Shall we wrap up?
Yeah.
There won't be any food left.
Yeah, we're gonna.
Thank you.
Sure thing, Mike.